Bamidbar chapter 11. This chapter very explicitly starts a series of what is called in the Mishnah, Pirkei Avos, Asura Nisyonos Shenisya Avisenu as HaKadosh Baruch Bamidbar. Test or trials that the people, our forefathers, have tried God in the desert. And the word trials or testing is meant to say the times or the places and the ways in which they didn't trust the plan. They didn't trust. In other words, we've read just a minute ago how there's a structure to the whole plan, right? There's the Anonim, there's the Kehanim, the Chatzotzers that are leading the people throughout their journey in the desert, throughout their making war on all the people around them and getting to the land of Israel, which is their goal, as it said very explicitly in the previous chapter, right? Noisim anachnu al hamokim, asher omer Hashem, that He will give it to us. And now, there's a list of what we call sometimes sins of the desert. They're really trials where the people were not succeeding. They were not succeeding in taking this plan as it is, but they had many questions or many doubts on the plan. And these are doubts, are not only doubts like intellectual doubts, but problems with the plan of the travel throughout the desert and this whole thing. And this, all these nisyanis, all these so-called sins or problems that are discussed, all are associated with a place, or almost all of them at least. In other words, this is all associated with the structure of there being a long travel throughout the desert, stopping in different places. And in many of the places, there were some issues rising up and some complaints, sometimes translated as complaints or testings or lack of trust of the people in the plan, in the leadership, right? In the leadership that is taking them throughout this desert, throughout this whole plan. So here we start. We start with one. And as we'll see, this is where I'm emphasizing the word leadership and the important part of the story, the main story of this chapter. This shows that sometimes it's framed, right? And we already discussed in Sefer Shemois how there's a short version of this whole story, of this whole maybe not of these same stories. Some people say it's the same story, some people say it's not. But for sure, a short version of this concept, this problem of the travel throughout the desert and all the trials that there were in that. And over there, it's mostly framed and very explicitly framed as the people not trusting in God, not trusting in God who is their leader. Here we get a little bit more detail in that, and we see that there's mostly a question of the kind of leadership that is leading them. And we'll see in the later in this chapter how this kind of complaints also changed the structure of their leadership, because there was some kind of leadership, and apparently that kind of leadership didn't actually work, or at least after the people complained, after the people tested it, they saw that it doesn't provide for them what they need. So there was a different models of leadership tried out. In some sense, the whole story of Parshas Yisro seems to be very much connected to this. Of course, we even had Chovav, Chos and Moshe a minute ago, seems to be connected with this story, the main story of this chapter, and so on. So it's a lot more complex. We're sometimes taught to collapse this. Maybe Sefer Shemoth teaches us to collapse this into the question of, do we trust God? Do we not trust God? But really, trusting God means here, and always really, never means unless trusting God in the abstract sense, in the most general sense. It means trusting and accepting this specific kind of leadership, which is in the name of God, which is, you know, bringing down the God's direction to us in the very specific ways. And there are actually issues with such leaderships, as long as they're human leaderships. They are by humans and for humans, and they have to solve all kinds of human issues. And as we'll see, in some sense, even Hashem agrees and changes the model of leadership or the style of leadership for these purposes. So that's the story, and that's why this is a lot more complex story than the simplification of it, the questions of faith and doubt and things like that. So today we'll read mostly two of these stories, or two parts of these stories. The first is Tav'eira, as it finishes, and that's why I said each one of these is associated in a place. Many of these stories finish, and therefore the place was called such and such. And now these are places in the desert. It's kind of interesting that some of those places in the desert have names. Of course, these are probably oases or places where it's feasible for people to stay, and people later used to travel to the desert and say, okay, this is called Tavera because this is what happened there. But it's still interesting that there's like this naming of places in the desert. It goes back to the logic of Sefer Bereishis, where many stories end with like the name of a place because of something that happened to the Oves there or something like that. And here there's something similar, although the name, the places are not really like places where people live. They're more like places of travel or something like stops in the desert. So the first thing is the people were misoynim, translated usually as complaining. And this is Rab Ozne Hashem. This was bad. So they were complaining. God heard it. Hashem heard their complaints. And he was upset. Vayicharapa, he was angry. And therefore God's fire burnt. So that's the first response. And like also like a very general kind of response. It doesn't give us. And this story probably is in this place in this book because it's a very general story. It doesn't give us details what their complaint was. It doesn't give the details of what God's anger was. It doesn't give details of what God's punishment or the expression of his anger was, which is really what anger is about. We hear that there was a fire and the fire started burning at the edge of the camp. So maybe that's just literally what it was. But so fire can mean something very general. It can mean a thousand things. What did the fire start from? What exactly happened? Did people die? What happened? In any case, the people cried to Moshe, or they come with complaints to Moshe. Vayitzak ha'amel Moshe. We read usually that Vayitzak means something like having a legal complaint or summons. They're lodging complaint with Moshe, and Moshe prays to Hashem, and the fire goes down. So there's no tshuva here. Very interesting. There's almost no tshuva in any of the stories, besides possibly the story of the Egel, and maybe the story of the Meraglim. But in most of these stories and complaints, and most of Moshe's interventions before God, for the people, his point isn't, we will stop sinning. His point is always different things. So it says, he is mispalel, and the fire goes down, the fire ruins. Of course, if you read Rashi and people like that, they'll tell you what the prayer was and what the question was, but it doesn't mention in the Pasuk. All that's mentioned is this very anonymous, very sort of simple story. And then this place is called Tavera because Tavera is from language of fire, from burning. The fire of Hashem burnt to them. This might be also the fire that we had before, the Esh Hashem, which is going in front of them or above them at night, might be the same fire which has burnt them. So very similar to the story of Nodav Aviyu. And then we could think of what this Misoinim exactly means. But okay, that's this first story of Tavera. And Moshe, for example, in the Sefer Devarim, has this very short pasuk of Tavera, of Masu, of Kivrei Satav, of Maksif Meisim Es Hashem. There were these three places, and they knew Tavera is one of the places where the people angered God. We don't need a lot more. Now we have the next story. Masu, of course, is the story which we'll have in Parshas Chukas in some sense, already had in Parshas Bishalach. Now, what we have now is the next story, and the story which, as I've given the title, Kivrei Satav, because this is the story. Based around this place called Kivrei Satav, but also a lot more complex story. This is really the story of not the man, right? The story of the giving of the man is already we had in Parshas B'Shalach, but the reaction to the man. In Parshas B'Shalach, we noticed that there's some complexity with the man. The people were happy, they were not happy. There's some kind of testing with it, which was not clear. It seems to be all about the Shabbos and things like that. Here we learn that there's some more complaints about the man. The man was more problematic, right? Again, the Sefer Bamidbar complexifying, problematizing very simplistic things that we had in Sefer Shemos. Sefer Shemos, the man is just great sign of God's providing for us and so on. Here suddenly we see that people were not happy. And of course it's presented as a problem, but then we see Hashem himself agreeing. And of course, giving them meat is something that explicitly gives them also in Sefer Shemos. So it seems like, again, we could debate if these are separate stories or if these happened in different stages, but it doesn't matter. The idea is that what is presented there is something very simple and maybe a legitimate request of where, you know, they ask for man, for food and for bread and for meat, and they received it. Here we see that what they received wasn't really so good, and there was like these steps where they wanted more of that, and that was involved in an entire revolution of the structure of leadership. So let's read the story. And the story starts with Asafsef. Asafsef is something like the gathers, but the not correct gathers, right? Ad-Eda is the people that gather in the proper way, the legitimate representatives of the call of the Asifa. And Asafsef are something like, right, sometimes translated here, the riffraff. The people that are gathered, but gather not in a proper way, not in an organized way. They're not the legitimate representatives of the people. His Avu Savo, they have desired a desire. They received a desire. And then Vayeshuva v'yivku gam b'nei Yisrael. Then the b'nei Yisrael, in other words, all the people, not only the Asafsif, started to cry. So it started, and this is somehow mirrors the previous story with the Ktzeh Amachna. The people in the Ktzeh Amachna, or the Asafsif, not the center, not the what's sometimes called the mainstream, are the ones, but they somehow infected the mainstream, the b'nei Yisrael, also with their complaint. So it's not that they had a bad complaint, it just, again, started the complaint from there. And they said, so this was their main complaint. Who will give us to eat meat? We don't have meat to eat. And their complaint gets elaborated in this long soliloquy where they say, we remember we had in Mitzrayim for free fish and kishuim and aftichem, all kinds of vegetables. Apparently they're describing it. Fish is plentiful, of course, in the Nilus, as we've learned from the story of Makas Dam. And we have vegetables, many things that are growing. And now we have nothing, our souls, our bodies, our person is dry, there's nothing, we only have man, that's all we're looking at. And here the narrator gives us a side note and tells us what was this man. And he tries to praise the man, he tries to say the man was good, but obviously we can see from their response that, yes, the man was good, but it was still kind of limited, right? And the Pasuk says, the man is like Kizra God, it's like a seed of a God, it's a kind of grain, that's what it was like, right? It's not like that it was water, but it was like. And its color, its color was the color of Bedoylach. So Bedoylach is some kind of precious stone. So it's a nice color. And it describes how they prepared it. The people would spread around and gather it together and then grind it or beat it in like not a grinding machine, but something that you use sometimes for spices and things like that, and they would cook it, and they would make out of it cookies or cakes, and it would taste like Lashad HaShomen, apparently an oil kind of pastry, similar to what it says in Sefer Shmos, Ketzapiches B'dvash. So somehow this man was something that we would make flour and make some kind of cake or cookie or bread out of. That's what the man was. Of course, there's Midrashic and very interesting descriptions of it, but it seems to have, the psikim seem to very much describe it in a very explicit physical material way. And this man was at night, when there was the dew coming at night, that's when the man was coming on it. So that's the description of the man. And now we're back to the people's complaints. They're complaining about this. Now, just like we had before, Hashem hears in his ears, so to speak, hears the complaints and is upset. Here, and earlier, Moshe was not upset. Moshe was praying to Hashem that he should forgive the people, so to speak. Here, it's Moshe is hearing them. They're each, all their families, Ish lefesach ali. So again, I think emphasizing that this is not a legitimate assembly, right? There's families gathering each at the doorway of their tent, of their place where they live. So this is like an illegitimate assembly, like a protest. Not unlike when there was a legitimate assembly that we learned earlier about the Chatzotzeres, that would come to the Pesach al Moed. Pesach al Moed, always the entryway into a city or into a house is, at least in ancient times and maybe also now, are like the place where people assemble, like for meetings, for important things. And here they're doing ish lefesach alis, each for his family, each for its space of. As we discussed, these are the basic units of the society here. So they're doing it separately, each in their way. And Hashem is upset, and Moshe is also. This is an interesting inversion of the previous story, right? Over there was Rab Oznei Hashem, so Oznei and Enei might be similar, and Moshe was not upset, but here it's Ra Be'enei Moshe. And now, therefore, and then here's Moshe's response to this. Moshe doesn't complain to the people, he complains to Hashem. He complains to Hashem about the people. Moshe goes to Hashem, and this is a recurring motif in Moshe, but this is, I think, the most extreme case of it. Or one of the most extreme cases of it, Moshe comes to Hashem and he says, why do you hate me? Why have you hurt me? Why are you doing bad to your servant? Did I not find favor in your eyes that you've put all of this pressure, all of this obligation on me? Did I give birth to them? Did I carry them in my womb? That you're telling me, you're asking me to carry them in my lap? Or in my on my body, as if in the same way that a nurse carries her nursee, the person she nurses, and take them to the land that you've promised. This is what you mean. And in other words, Moshe is saying, yes, I've received this command. I received this command to take them to Eretz Yisrael as a military leader, as a leader of adults. But these people are acting like children. What do you want me to be, their babysitter? This is what you want? Am I their babysitter? Am I their mother? Am I their nurse? And then he says, where do I have meat to give all these people? They're crying to me, give us meat. I got them in the desert. They should be happy that they're alive, that they got man. Like, they're crying. They're just spoiled and crying for meat. I can't. And Moshe says, I can't. I can't carry this. I can't bear this burden. It's more too heavy for me. Of course, this is exactly the language that Yisrael told Moshe. Ki chovedu m'cha dover. This is too heavy of me. It's, of course, psychologically heavy, right? Not physically heavy. And if this is what you want, and this is repeating what Moshe said by the eagle, but in a more extreme sense, this is what you're doing to me, just kill me. You love me, and I found favor in your eyes. I'd rather you kill me than me have this evil happen to me. I'd rather be dead. So this is Moshe's most extreme sort of denial or refusal of carrying the burden of the people. And Moshe and Hashem receives, unlike other places where Hashem says, no, I'll give you the power and things like that. And again, very similar to what happens in Parshas Yisra, Moshe Hashem acquiesces to this request. He says, you're right. You can't carry them. Let me give you some help. Let me delegate for you. And Hashem says to Moshe, get together for me 70 people of the elders of the people. You know that these are their elders. These are their shoitram. These are the people that deal with them, that manage them. Take them to the El Moed, again, to the legitimate meeting place, and make them stand, put them, present them to me over there. I will come, I will speak to you, and I will give some of the spirit which is on you and put it on them. In other words, your whole thing is that you speak with me, you have my spirit on you. Spirit means my words, my direction, prophecy. Let's spread it out, let's give it to these 70 people, they'll have some of it and they'll carry the burden with you. Then you'll tell the people, prepare for tomorrow, you'll have meat, you cried, no problem, you'll have meat, and now they get the meat in an angry way, right? Sometimes someone says to a child, you know, you'll get your request put in an angry way. No problem. You said it was better in Egypt. You wanted meat. I'll give you meat. And not only one day, not 2 days, not 5 days, not 10 days, not 20 days. A month straight you'll eat meat. So remember that in this time, and the third way the Torah presents it, meat is not something you eat every day. Meat is a very celebratory thing, right? We have karbonos that are basically about eating meat in the correct way. It's a zevach, it's a whole situation. Someone eating meat every day is like, nowadays we would say, we're used to eating meat every day. Sometimes we would say like, I'll give you chocolate. You'll eat it for breakfast and for lunch and for supper, the ice cream. That's what you wanted? You wanted ice cream? You're not happy? I'm taking you to the land of Israel and you're crying that you don't have your candies? No problem. I'll give you 10,000 candies until you throw up from it. That's what it says. Until it would go out of your noses. It's another way, you'll vomit or you'll throw up. That's, I think, vomit sometimes comes out of your nose. And Vayelecham Lazura will be strange, it will be horrible to you. This is all because you have forsaken, you have been Moyes, the Dvar Hashem, which is with you, and you've cried for him saying, why did we go out of Egypt? So that's Hashem's response. And now Moshe still seems to not be happy. This is very interesting. So Hashem seems to say to Moshe, no problem, you'll get 70 helpers, and then somehow we'll give them as much meat as they want. And then Moshe says, what do you mean? Okay, the helpers I get, but the meat, where am I going to get them from? There's 600,000 foot goers here. You can tell me I'm going to give them meat for a month, so Hashem is like making the request harder. Like, my meat for 1 day is enough. What am I going to slaughter for them? All the cattle, all the sheep, is it going to be enough? I'm going to gather for them all the fish in the sea. Is it going to be enough? It's not enough. It's not possible to supply a people like this with meat every day. And here Hashem tells the Moshe, don't worry. God's hand is not short. God can do that. You will see if this will happen. In other words, think more things are possible on heaven and earth than as imagined in your philosophy. Things are possible. So for your complaint that you can't do it yourself, that was a legitimate complaint. But you think that it's not possible to get the meat? For God, it's possible. And that's what happens. And now Moshe follows. Moshe follows through. He goes out. He speaks, tells the people what God said. He gets together 70 people. God comes down in his cloud. He speaks to Moshe. And Vayotzel, this is, of course, an interesting verb. We get the word Atzilus from it. Somehow he transmits from the spirit which is on Moshe, and it goes on the 70 people, the 70 elders, and they have the Ruach rest on them, and they prophesy. Now there's another interesting side note in the story, again connected very much with the question of Moshe's leadership and also of his succession, which is starting to become an issue. Moshe is getting old, and to a big extent, the end of Sefer Midbar, and also the end of Sefer Dvarim, or maybe the whole Sefer Dvarim, is concerned with the question of Moshe's succession. So now, We see a story. There were two people. So there were these 70 people, again, gathered to the correct meeting place. No, don't go in these like protest areas. You're going to come here. It's going to be a managed. Like, this is also a way of managing the opposition, right? If we give every elder his honor, his due respect, and then they'll all be part of the program. And otherwise, they each go ish pesach ha'ala, and they start being seditious and creating rebellions and things like that. So now, it seems like two people are still out of the program. There's two people still in the camp. They didn't come to the Pesach Oil. They're called Eldad and Maedad. And they've also received the Spirit. They were written in the paper, in whatever way. In other words, they were the people. They're part of the people that were sort of invited to this thing. But they didn't go. So this is almost an explicit rebellion. Of course, interestingly, while they're doing this rebellion, they received their prophecy. So they must have been worthy of something. And like when Hashem gave the prophecy to the 70 elders, it got to them also, because they're one of them. They're part of they're on the list. But they're prophesying in the camp, not part of the system, not being in the organized under Moshe. And therefore, Hanar, some young person, not as always a young person, but also someone who is a servant, someone who's helping, runs to Moshe and tells him this. And therefore, Yeshua Benin, Moshe's official gabbai, Mibechurav, is, again, we remember, Bechalon Anashim, his chosen, Moshe's chosen leader, Moshe's chosen next leader, successor. He explicitly chose him already in the Milchemes Amalek we saw, and by the story of the Egel, to be his representative, right? And Hashia Sabadoni Moshe Kloim, destroy these people. Look at them, they're rebellious. And Moshe says, Moshe very interestingly responds, what do you want from me? This is what I asked for. Are you being jealous for me? Are you being mad for me? Halavai, mi yiten. I wish all of God's people will be prophets and God will give him spirit on them. Of course, this is a very beautiful mood of Moshe Rabbeinu, where he's like, I don't want to keep prophecy for myself. I want everyone to have it. But it's really a continuation also in the context of the story of what he said. This whole thing of giving 70 people prophecy was a response to Moshe saying, I can't do it myself. So Moshe is telling Yeshua, so there's two more people, so they're not entirely part. Let them take care of themselves. Let them help me. I'm giving up. I can't do all of this myself. And that's the story. And therefore, Moshe and the 70 people go back to the Vayosef Moshe. They go back and they gather it in a correct way, not in a safsa way. They gather back to the camp. And the promised meat also comes. There's a wind. And there's slav, which is a pheasant, I think, kind of bird. Sometimes there's in the desert or close to the desert, there's these huge migrations of them. So that's the kind of background for this. And they spread out to get around the camp, like as a way, spread out so large, a way of a day from each way, right? The amount of space that a person walks a day, right? You measure time space with time. And two amis above the ground. So tons of slav, a huge thing of slav here. And the people stand up and they go all day and all night. And the next day, yom yomayim, they gather the slav. The smallest one had 10 piles or 10 chamorim, 10 groups, like chamorim we had in Mitzrayim. And they spread it out around the machnes, so to salt it, to preserve it, and something like that. And this caused some problems. While the meat was still between the teeth, so they're still enjoying it, and afashem chorebem, God's anger hit in them. God's anger usually means a famine, or not a famine, some kind of plague. In other words, and we could also imagine this plague, you know, we eat too much meat and some of us was contaminated or something. They got some bird flu and they were contaminated, and a great makaraba, a great hitting, or how do you translate maka in a clear way, the great blow or a great, always means the people dying or getting sick, what happened in the people. And this is why this place was called Kivrei Satava. So the graves of the Tava, the graves of the people who had a Tava, in other words, these people that died from eating too much love or from whatever plague came along with it. And then that's the end of this station, of this place where they rested. Afterward, they traveled to Chatzairus, and they're in Chatzairus, and they will have more stories of problems with the leadership.